Welcome to the fourth and final episode of Prevention Unpacked, the journey and vision of Zilli Sloboda. In this concluding conversation, we look towards the horizon. Dr. Sloboda shares her vision for the next generation of prevention, how the field can respond to the new social and technological realities, deepen equity and inclusion, and continue to grow as a global movement. We reflect on her remarkable career, her leadership philosophy, and what she hopes her legacy will mean for those who follow. Zilli, thank you so much for joining us once again. When you look 10 to 20 years ahead, how do you imagine the field of prevention evolving?
Hi, Goodman. Thanks again for this opportunity. That's a challenging question, and I like it. When I look ahead and imagine how the field would be evolving, first of all, that there is a profession that's recognized, that young people want to be prevention professionals. That would be really exciting. Imagine somebody saying, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they say they want to be a prevention professional. That would really be amazing to me. I think that I like to see prevention. Earlier conversation, we talked about a culture of prevention. I would love to see a culture of prevention evolve in throughout the world, that people would be not focusing on immediate solutions, but they would be a long-term, so that what we learn from prevention would be incorporated in programs in schools and in family support programs in the community at large. I think prevention, what we learn from prevention and substance use, really apply to prevention of all many other kinds of challenging behaviors that have negative outcomes. So that's what I would love to see, that there is a recognition in the field of prevention that people, universities offer degrees in prevention. And then one other thing I'd like to see is when people are trained in prevention, that there are two tracks for prevention. So you can go into a research track or a practice track. The point is that you'll be trained together, because that disconnect between research, even though it's getting smaller, between research and practice, that it's getting smaller, but I would like to eliminate it, that people in practice would want to work with prevention researchers.
You know, in a previous episode, Zilli, we spoke about the siloing and how in many ways it's harmful, but in some ways can be exploited. And now we've really spoken about as well embedding the capacity building, training and competence building of practitioners, and making sure that folks, even if they're going to follow research or practice, have exposure to the same science, and that they, you know, the training track is aligned. And of course, having those competency-oriented degrees in prevention. Beyond that, is there any other idea that you might have for how prevention can really be truly integrated into the health and social systems globally?
I think that's a challenging question, of course. I think for this preventive healthcare, people understand that. They don't practice it necessarily, and that's the unfortunate thing. I think once we can get acknowledgement of that, how we integrate what we've learned in prevention into that system, if that's clear, I think would be very helpful. I think talking to our colleagues in health and social systems, having discussions with them, I think would really be helpful. I think not only at the community level, but as you point out, globally, if we can do that. I think that's the only way it can be done. I think the concept of prevention, I think, is embraced by the health and social systems, but they think in terms of health promotion more than preventive certain behaviors. It's a little bit different. So we want to push them, nudge them along the way to really see that you want to go beyond that. You really want to go deeper. And so we need to talk more with our colleagues and find leaders in those fields who would help us communicate the need for the integration to their colleagues, and they can speak in their language if you understand what I mean.
So it really comes back, from what I'm hearing, Zilli, to that culture of prevention. I feel like future discussions and interventions that we put together for the ISOP community could really interrogate what a culture of prevention looks like, you know, from the ground up, at the policy level, at the implementation level, at the community, at the practitioner level, from the non-specialized to the specialized. So it's really something that I think we could grapple with going forward in the future.
Absolutely.
You know, we've spoken a little bit in the other episodes about some of the digital innovations, and you've said, you know, you are very excited to see innovation coming in from researchers and from practitioners. Are there specific frontiers that you feel prevention science should explore and exploit, especially being responsive to the digital environment, to climate change, to neuroscience, to AI and equity?
I think one of the challenges I like to focus on is climate change, because it's happening. It's happening everywhere, and it impacts communities where they are, but also it's forcing communities to move. So they're moving into other, they may be moving into other cultures, if you will. And we see that even just in the United States, how climate change has been moving people into new communities. So I think that's we haven't talked about that. Just superficially, a number of our young, particularly younger prevention professionals have mentioned that that's become a challenge for them. So I think that's one area. I think the digital environments, I think, is also important, particularly also I think that the information that there's so much erroneous information that people have, particularly young people have. I don't know how we address that. That is definitely a challenge that we need to counter in some way. The whole, also in line with that is just social media in general. We sort of touch on that in the UPC, but I think we need to do more in how to help prevention professionals be effective in that arena. So yeah, I think those are some of the challenges in the future.
One reflection we discussed at length in Lisbon a couple of years ago was the fact that when we talk about screening, brief intervention, referral to treatment, we don't talk enough about the fact that we are dealing with an industry that continues to innovate in terms of exposure. And we don't account enough when we talk about brief interventions for those elements. So when you brought in, the vast amounts of erroneous information also being driven by AI in some ways and social media, those are really important elements to think about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Silly, in terms of leadership and influence, again, we've touched on this in previous episodes, but just for those who are just encountering us now in this episode and to stimulate their desire to go back to episode one to learn more, what philosophies would you say have guided your leadership approach in global collaborations and organizations?
One is respect. I think that's really important. Listening, that's in line with respect, is don't talk so much. Listen, make notes. We learn a lot from each other. I think that's important. Even within our own communities, we learn a lot from other people. This particularly in prevention, it's such a broad area. You know, there's no one vaccine, there's no one medication. It's very comprehensive, and it's changing. Our language changes, our behaviors. Think about the impact of COVID. You go to conferences and you see people and you shake their hand, right? But during COVID, we couldn't do that. So how do you, you're wearing a mask? It's, we have to recognize that there are changes and we have to be ready for those. And we need to just be open to that. I think that's the most important thing is openness and debate and being able to debate stuff. You're wrong. I'm wrong. I didn't realize that. You know, being able to use those words, I think, are really healthy.
Yeah, so genuine, well-meaning collegiate debate.
Being collegial in the best sense of the word, right, exactly.
We've had a lot of discussions on the African continent about the incorporation of traditional leadership. And one of the complaints that they make is that they don't see traditional structures being respected in how the West designs and implements community-level implementation, prevention and treatment strategies. So indeed, it's really about respect, listening, making notes, and trying to, of course, still impart the importance of evidence in order to sell a prevention strategy.
Right. And I think I want to underscore here that our researchers should be working with the practitioners so that we can't do randomized controlled trials all the time. We've got to think about other methodologies that are strong, that are easy to implement at the community level. And I think it was happening for a while, but I think somehow COVID, it really set us back a bit. I think ISOP has a good role to play in that regard. But I think that's also very important. We really need to know that what we're doing, and not only for ourselves, but we also for our communities that we work in. We've been able to say that communities, we're really making a difference. More kids are graduating from school, fewer overdoses coming to the emergency room amongst kids, young people. I mean, we need to be able to show the community that we're having an impact.
So, I mean, you've spoken about the future leaders now, in that response. So how, in your view, can current and future leaders really foster a more inclusive, interdisciplinary and equitable prevention field?
You know, I'm thinking about being a young person today in this field. I'm sure that right now a lot of them feel very isolated, so it's kind of hard. I think, we talked about the graduate school experience, keeping in touch. You know, I think it's easier these days than it was when I was younger in the field to stay in touch with, to form a network that you can, you know, tap into online. I've noticed recently, this past 2 weeks, I've been seeing some notices from some of the people who've gone through our training, who share some of their experiences of some of their challenges. So staying in touch, I think, would be really important if we can, you know, these people are doing them, they're not, what am I going to say? It's not institutionalized. I think we need to institutionalize. That's the word I wanted to use. Institutionalize this kind of networking. I don't know how we do that. But I think this way, new ideas, new publications or journal articles perhaps can be shared. And maybe to have a forum for discussion about some significant papers that come out, I think would be really helpful. I think we have the tools today to really be able to build this cadre of people who share the same kinds of challenges, but they can talk to each other. They feel free that they can share with each other. So I would, that's the advice I would have, is we have to form these networks and to support each other. It's not easy being out there on your own.
You know, Zilly, how I summarize what you've said is connectedness, right? So we're talking about in this current social media heavy time that we live in, where people are connected but not connected. And when you say institutionalize, I hear give the profession a home. And when you say, you know, talking about new ideas and making sure there's spaces to explore them, it's give the ideas a home. So the theme all around is connectedness and home. So yes. give these people a space and a sense of belonging to the field.
Yes, exactly. I think that's very well put, Goodman. Thank you.
Awesome. So given this sense of isolation and the sense of, you know, a lot of folks are still finding out about, resources like UPC, UTC, that they can belong to organizations like ISAP. What advice would you give to early and mid-career prevention professionals about building influence and resilience, you know, functioning in this very challenging space?
Well, I know how hard it is. And it takes time. I think have patience. I think prevention practitioners know that already. Look for small wins, share them with your colleagues. I think that's good. Talking to each other, that's why I think the networking is really important. As I said, I felt isolated, you know, earlier, my earlier discussions, and how I was kind of an oddball in some situations because I didn't have the support and understanding that was necessary. I think that's all I can say. Having influence, I think, is important, and building that is with small wins, knowing your communities, knowing what they think is important, understanding that, talking to people, connecting with people. And I know it's hard. I think teaming up, for instance, we talked earlier about prevention and treatment professionals teaming up, supporting each other. They're not opposing forces. They really aren't. They work together. And I hear often, you know, when harm reduction began to become a force in the United States, the prevention people were really scared that this meant that all funding was going to disappear for prevention. But we're all on the team. We don't talk about the natural history of substance use disorder. We talk about the natural history of cancer. We talk about the natural history of other diseases, but we don't talk about natural history of substance use from that, you know, the onset through to recovery, post-recovery. Their services are needed. That's why we need comprehensive services in a community that work together to address this issue. So that's just some thoughts out there that answers your question.
It does, Zilly. And so again, for me, it sounds like you're saying we must team up. We must identify synergies. Let's not work against each other. Let's pull together.
Together.
And you know, one piece I would add to that is be a trustworthy partner. Be a trustworthy collaborator. Be a genuine partner.
Yes.
I think, you know, you spoke earlier about caring about the work that we do, caring about the workforce, but we should also be good people and care about each other and be trustworthy. And when we're at the table, be so meaningfully and with commitment.
Yeah, we're all in this to address the same issue. You know, for instance, in the epidemiologic studies were showing that the most at-risk group are children of substance users. So why why don't we have parenting programs, for instance, in treatment? We have lots of great evidence-based parenting program in treatment, and a lot of people in treatment are parents, and they're going to be leaving treatment, and they're going to have to take on the parenting role. How can we help them so they help their children? So we need those kinds of conversations.
Zilly, a lot of us know your history so well, and we know your accolades and your achievements so well, and there's so many of them. When you personally reflect on your career, what moments or achievements really feel most meaningful to you?
Good question. Hard question to answer. I must say the creation of ISOP and ICU-DDR probably were the crowning moments, because we were working towards that for years. So I think those would be really significant moments for me. The fact that we were able to build Applied Prevention Science International and be able to get out there with information. And I might want to just make a plug here. Springer is going to be coming out. We have a book that's coming out next year for prevention science for practitioners applied to practice. Hopefully it'll be coming out 2026. And I think that will be also for me. That's probably the last book I'm going to be doing. It's a lot of work. Yeah, that coming out will be summarizing everything I've been working towards.
That sounds great. I'm so glad that you listed ISOP as a highlight in terms of the things that you've been part of that you've achieved, and we appreciate that. Sort of to take that further, what would you like to see ISOP and our partners prioritize to advance prevention globally? I mean, we've already spoken in the other episodes about the really important role ISOP plays in supporting the network, in supporting capacity building, and creating spaces for engagement. What else would you like to see ISOP achieve?
Well, I think ISOP is already working towards, for instance, the professionalization, credentialing, et cetera. I think that, and I'm not sure if ISOP is still doing this, by the way. When we originally designed it, we had advisors from prevention and treatment to update the science, et cetera. And I think that is important. I don't know how you work on this culture of prevention. I think that gets sort of into the political realm, and I'm not sure how you partner with to do that. I think certainly the United Nations seems to be the obvious first connection, and you're already working with that. So I think you're well on your way to doing that. So that's what I would say is how can we get this culture of prevention instilled, recognized by governments of different countries. I think if we do that, that would be that the prevention practitioners within those countries can help to bring it to the community level, hopefully.
I think what we're really excited about, Zilly, is that we've now got a scientific council that supports ISOP in terms of making sure that the science is strong. And on that, we have some really good prevention representation as well. And of course, we're excited to continue to have you to lean on as well. So we appreciate you. In closing, Zilly, as the final question of the series, before I asked you what keeps you up at night in the other episode, so this time I want to ask you, what gives you hope for the future of prevention?
I think all these events that have taken place over the last 10, 15 years, with the creation of the international groups, ISOP and ICDDR, the fact that there is these growing societies for prevention research, which includes practice, by the way, I want to emphasize that, in Europe as well as the United States, of course, now in Asia Pacific, bringing prevention researchers together with prevention practitioners. The fact that we're talking about professionalization of the field, these all give me a great deal of hope for the future. It's amazing to see it happen.
Zilly, what gives me hope is the continued accessibility of experts such as yourself to us to continue sharing your knowledge and expertise. So we really appreciate you. And I just want to say thank you from ISOP for joining us for this series.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. It really gave me reason to think about all the last 50 years.
As we close this series, we extend our heartfelt thanks to Dr. Zilly Sloboda for her wisdom, generosity, and her lifelong commitment to building a world where prevention is both science and practice, evidence and empathy. From her journey, we're reminded that prevention is not a static goal, but a living process, one that evolves with each generation of thinkers and doers to carry it forward. From all of us at ISOP, thank you for listening to Prevention Unpacked. May these conversations inspire you to keep learning, leading, and innovating in the science of prevention. Thank you for spending this time with us. We hope you enjoy that as much as we did. Be sure to hop on over to our website, isop.net, where you'll find information on how to sign up for free membership. Take care and catch you on the next one.